Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hope everyone out there had a fantastic weekend. It was a weekend loaded with great football. I mean, Saturday we had instant classics in Knoxville, in South Bend. Yesterday, great games in Dallas, in Indianapolis. Tons of great football this weekend. Sadly, it did not involve the Tennessee Titans. Parker, I know, tough weekend for you on Saturday and Sunday, really. But overall, lots of great football over the last couple days.
No, if you're a football fan, it was a great weekend for you. I stayed up. I watched football all of the way up until, I believe, 1:30 or so on Saturday, or I guess Sunday morning at that, and then watched football all day yesterday, including going to the Titans game. Now, my teams did not win, but it was a great weekend for football.
Yeah, it's rare when you go into a weekend and say, there are some really great games. It's rare that they all live up to the hype, and it felt like they did this weekend. We'll get into Tennessee and Georgia a little bit more later in the show, but that was an instant classic, back-and-forth game, down to the wire, goes to overtime. Georgia pulls it off with a 44-41 win. Then Notre Dame, Texas A&M at night. Couldn't handle the snap on the PAT for the Fighting Irish, and then Marcel Reed leads the Aggies down the field, scores on fourth down and goal to win that game for Texas A&M. Unbelievable football on Saturday. Yesterday, Cowboys and Giants, for the first time in like 12 years, that game was played in the 1 p.m. slot, and it was the best game we've gotten between them. That one went to overtime, too. Cowboys get the win. And then, of course, the Colts lost the game, but then the ref said there was leverage on the field goal attempt. And there you go. The Broncos fall to 1-1. Colts going to come to Nissan Stadium 2-0. We've got plenty to get to on the show today. We are going to talk Vandy later this hour as the Commodores went in and made a statement in Columbia. The Commodores now ranked in the top 20 in the nation, coming back home to face Georgia State this week, Utah State next week, before heading to Alabama. We'll get everything, get into everything that Vanderbilt did on Saturday night in a 31-7 win. Again, we'll talk Vols and everything else that went on around college football. But we will lead off with the Titans, who fell 33-19 yesterday to the Rams. And Parker, we expected this. This is 2 weeks in a row where you head into the game expecting the Titans to lose. And I know some people out there may hate that because you don't want to expect the team to lose, but they were the less talented team. And yesterday they were out-talented. And I don't have a ton of a problem with the way the Titans played yesterday. They didn't play well, but they lost because they were the less talented team. And that's going to happen this year with the way this roster is constructed.
I think the biggest issue for me was we both talked about the Rams on paper, most talented team. We expected the Rams to win, which they did. I think the problematic thing was the Titans had the lead going into halftime, 13-10, excuse me. But then they got outscored by the Rams 26-6 in the second half. So that was the biggest thing, because the offense that was there in the first half was not there in the second half, and the defense was very porous. So that's probably the most difficult thing that I have a tough time wrapping my mind around.
Yeah, and they didn't play well. The Titans did not play well, especially in the second half. They couldn't slow down Puka Nacua. They couldn't slow down Davante Adams. They blitzed repeatedly and just could not get home. I believe the only time they got home was when Amani Hooker kind of half tripped up Matthew Stafford. And if he hadn't lost his balance, he still would have stayed up. And they just could not affect Matthew Stafford enough in that game. Puka Nacua, Davante Adams each had over 100 yards and ended up leading the Rams to that 14-point win. The Titans, I'm trying to look at the way Brian Callahan coached that game. And I know last week, Callahan was the big story. He made some really bad decisions. There weren't really a ton of opportunities for him to have a noticeable impact on that game. Like, the only scenario I look at with Brian Callahan was the end of the first half sequence after the Cody Barton interception, where he learned his lesson maybe a little bit too well from last week and decided to be conservative, just ran the ball, stayed in field goal range, ended up giving the Titans the lead. I had no problem with that. Do I think they could have been a touch more aggressive? Yeah. Like, I think you could have given Cam Ward one shot to try and get the ball deeper down the field with two timeouts. Like, I think there was an opportunity, and J.J. Watt was talking about that a lot in those final couple of seconds of, like, why are they not pushing the ball? Well, if you watched the game last week, I think Brian Callahan maybe had a little bit of PTSD of, hey, I got obliterated for being too aggressive and costing the team points. He didn't want to do that again. That's the only scenario yesterday where you really could look and say Brian Callahan had a noticeable impact on this game as a decision maker. Obviously, his play calling, for sure. But the sins were still bad. And that's where it's starting to become a massive red flag that he spent the whole offseason and through training camp and the preseason saying we cannot shoot ourselves in the foot with pre-snap penalties and bad penalties that gives these teams first downs, and they've done it 2 weeks in a row. You cannot keep doing that. Too many self-inflicted wounds and the penalties. 1 week is just 1 week sometimes, and that's fine. I was willing to give them a chance to say, all right, well, there were just maybe some fluky penalties here and there that ended up leading to that big 130 number in week one. But it was bad again yesterday. This cannot keep happening. Brian Callahan obviously has to be better with play calling and decision making and all of this. But the most important thing that he emphasized this offseason was penalties. And they were horrible again yesterday.
10 penalties for 62 yards. There wasn't a noticeable, instance yesterday in yesterday's game where Brian Callahan had a really noticeable screw up. I think the biggest problem I have is he's too conservative when he should be aggressive, and then when he needs to be aggressive, or when he doesn't need to be aggressive, that's when he is aggressive. So it's kind of backwards. But the penalties are egregious, yeah. And they keep occurring. So that has, to me, that's just a lack of discipline, and that's a direct reflection of the coaching staff.
Yeah, and it does bother me that they started the game with those pre-snap penalties. Like, Zeitler got this one wasn't pre-snap, the illegal man downfield that took a first down off the board in the first drive, and then you get the false start, then you take a sack. It's like, man, you just got to get out of your own way sometimes, and the Titans haven't been able to do that. The other penalty that stands out is the one that took the punt return off the board. Would have been the Titans' first punt return touchdown since 2012. Since 2012. 13 years ago was the Titans' last punt return touchdown. And it was the right call. Like, the rule is, on a crackback block, an illegal blindside block, because he didn't hit him that hard, but you cannot block going back towards your own goal line. Like, that is the letter of the law. You cannot block going back towards your own goal line. Cedric Gray did it, and it cost them a touchdown. Actually, they ended up scoring the Cam Ward touchdown on that drive. So, you know, it ended up working out for the Titans.
It ended up working out. Titans got seven.
And you got that highlight play. But those penalties are tough to swallow, too, because in the moment, it felt like you did take 7 points off the board. So the penalties have to be better. And I think you're right, Parker. There is a lack of feel from Brian Callahan on game situations of, like, when he needs to call certain plays. It's been over a year. At this point, the first-time play caller, first-time head coach excuse doesn't really ring true. Like, you've got to start to have some feel with your game management, the way they flow as an offense. And right now, through 2 weeks, it just feels like there's too many head-scratching decisions, especially in those late first half, late game scenarios. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trey has called in. Trey, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well.
Hey, I just wanted to say that this is just my opinion, my honest opinion. I don't want to hear Cam Ward speak. Basically, he says the same thing every week. You know, we're behind the chains. Why are you behind the chains? Because you're giving the ball to Tony Pollard, and he's running for 3 or 4 yards. And then when we get down in the red zone, there's a possibility, 50-50 chance, that he's going to fumble the ball. He's been doing it for 2 years. Stop. It's ridiculous. And coach don't know how to coach, and the quarterback don't know how to play the game. This is ridiculous. There's no glimmer of hope here. The only glimmer of hope here is Kevin Ridley. Who else is there to help us? This is ridiculous. We need to win some football games, and it starts with the coach. And the way he's coaching is pathetic. This team is pathetic. And all the fans know it. Nobody's coming to the games because this team is pathetic. And I love y'all. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Trey.
Wow.
There's some,
I love it.
There's some in there that is 100% true. It starts with the coaching, first of all. You're now 3-16 as a head coach if you're Brian Callahan. And I'll actually bring this up now because we're going to get into Cam Ward the next segment. There was a tweet yesterday, and actually came from Titans Reddit, which I'm not on Titans Reddit, but somebody tweeted this out.
I've never even read anything on Titans Reddit.
First 19 games, I know the comparison is Callahan to Wisenhunt, right? Like, that's where people are starting to go is, who's been the worst coach for the Titans, Callahan or Wisenhunt? First 19 games, both were 3-16. Callahan has turned it over 38 times to Wisenhut's 32. Wisenhunt scored one more point, and Callahan has allowed two less points. They have basically been the exact same coach through the first 19 games. So take that with what you will. But there are some things from Trey in there that were right. There were definitely some things that were wrong. Tony Pollard is not who you should blame for yesterday's game. Tony Pollard went 10 or 20 carries for 92 yards yesterday. He was actually pretty good. And Calvin Ridley, Calvin Ridley had 3 catches for, 57 yards yesterday? And the catch on third down where Emmanuel Forbes punched it out, like, I don't call that a drop. That was a good defensive play. Like, they punched the ball. It's going to be tough to hold on to that. But you can't say Calvin Ridley is the only bright spot on this team. If anything, it's Alec Iamanner.
Yeah, like, he's the one that made the superstar catch.
Alec Iamanner made a couple of great catches yesterday. So, Trey, thanks for the call. Some stuff 100% true. You know, Brian Callahan has not been good enough. Fans aren't showing up to the games. But to blame Tony Pollard and excuse Calvin Ridley yesterday, I'm not sure that's exactly how the game went. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts on the Titans 33-19 loss yesterday, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will get back to your phones when we come back. Also, some thoughts on Cam Ward. It was an up and down day for Cam Ward. The highs were very high, but there were some lows, especially late in the game as well. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.
Despite the outcome, Cam, do you feel like Callie said earlier, you thought you made some strides? Did you yourself feel like you made some strides from 1 week to another?
I think I did, especially in just getting in and out of the huddle, the speed of the game. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to win. And so that's what, our goal is here to do is to win. And, we got to turn around fast. We just got to continue to work. Come in next week with the right mindset like we have every week and, just continue to try to get better.
That was Cam Ward after the game yesterday talking about his growth from week one to week two. He wasn't perfect yesterday, but there was definitely some flashes. The big one, the touchdown pass to Alec Iamanner, the first of his NFL career. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. I thought Cam Ward was good again yesterday. Was he perfect? No. And the play that really flipped this game from being competitive to being over was the strip sack, and Cam Ward has to be better at not holding the ball as loosely. He also missed the throw to Chim down the sideline. He was a little late recognizing that he was open there. And the play to Gunnar Helm, where he was flailing and almost hit the ground before he threw it, please, Cam, never do that again. Like, we saw it enough with Will Levis last year. This time it worked out, but that's one of those plays where you tell Cam, hey, Glad it worked out. Don't ever do that again. Honestly, you could say the same thing about his touchdown throw. Like, there might be a little bit of, great throw, Cam, please never do that again on the sideline. Because he was running, I believe the stats came out, that he was running about 15 miles per hour to his right and towards the line of scrimmage, throws it back across his body, 40-something yards in the air, and it was a perfect throw. That is why you take him number one overall, because he can do that. Doesn't mean he should do that all the time. I'd like to see some more conventional touchdown passes from Cam Ward moving forward, but that was absolutely spectacular from Cam Ward for his first career touchdown pass late in the first half.
Yeah, I tweeted after the little flip to Gunnar Helm that it was very Will Levis-esque of him. The only difference was Cam Ward actually completed the pass and not to the other team.
Right.
So it was completed to the right team, so that's good, but you get nervous. And on that touchdown pass to Ayo Manor, everybody in the press box kind of like held their breath, got real nervous, and then once they completed, everyone let out a sigh of relief. That's the Cam Ward experience in a nutshell right there.
I mean, that is one of the more impressive throws that I have ever seen. And I don't think that's hyperbole. Like, that is what you teach quarterbacks not to do, because most quarterbacks don't have the arm strength to make that throw, running to your right, throwing across your body, not just back to the middle of the field. He basically threw that to the back pylon on the other side, and it was a perfect throw. And Elik Iyemanner did a great job of adjusting and making a play, but that is the arm talent that made you take Cam Ward number one overall. That is what everybody saw that said, that is why in a quote-unquote bad quarterback class, this is the guy you take number one overall. Again, I'd like to see some more, you know, just within the structure of the offense, touchdown passes from Cam Ward. But that was so impressive from Cam. In a play that looked completely dead, he had three defenders bearing down on him, that he was able to make that throw. It wasn't a perfect game yesterday, but again, this season isn't about him being perfect. It's about showing that he can be a franchise quarterback, and that's the type of play that makes you think that, hey, if we can get everything else around him better, and he can make more plays within the structure of the offense, but if we need that play in a playoff game 3 years down the line, he can make that play, and that's what you need out of a quarterback. He doesn't need to do it all the time, but if he can do it, that can be the difference between winning and losing. Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam from Portland is called in. Adam, good morning. What you got for us?
Jake, what are you talking about this morning, dude? Like, I want to see more conventional touchdown passes. Cam does too, dude.
That's like, well, no, I understand it's not his fault, but I'm saying I'd like to see Cam Ward not have to make those plays all the time.
So would he. Like, even throwing that play that was going to the ground, like, that would have been sack number six. Like, what do you expect from this guy, man? Like, fire the coach. Fire his daddy. Like, that's where I'm going to be. Every one of my messages and conversations is going to be fire the coach and fire his daddy, because it all leads back to that, dude. Like, you're setting records over here with how bad it looks. So don't put that on Cam, dude. Of course he would love to read his progression.
Adam,
man,
I wasn't criticizing him.
Because you're saying, don't ever do that again. Well, what's he supposed to do? That's one touchdown he's had in 2 weeks. Like, dude, I'm telling you, I get what you're saying, but it all leads back to the coach and his daddy, dude. He can't even read the first read, much less go through two reads and find somebody or stand in the pocket for 2 seconds. He's going to get hurt, dude. Look at Joe Burrow. He just got hurt. Him and Taylor came from the same thing. And even when Callahan was over there, he couldn't protect Burrow. So, if y'all want to see what it's going to look at what Cincinnati's dealing with right now. So I think quicker the better. If I learn that they fire that coach today, I will feel so much better about the rest of our season.
Thanks for the call, Adam. I was not criticizing Cam Ward. I'm not trying to say that it was his fault that he had to make that play. Like, obviously, the offensive line's not good enough. The play calling's not good enough. The wide receivers aren't good enough. So in order to score a touchdown, he kind of has to be spectacular. But I'd like to see things develop around him so he can just be a regular quarterback and not have to throw the ball 40 yards across his body in order to get into the end zone. That's all. I mean, I understand that it's not Cam's fault that he was flushed out of the pocket 2 seconds after he snapped the ball. They're not going to fire Callahan today. Like, I don't think that's not breaking any news. Callahan's got at least another month at the very minimum.
If things continue at this rate, though, with all the penalties and just undiscipline and just getting blown out in the second half like this, it's going to be sooner rather than later.
No, I agree. He definitely didn't do anything to help himself yesterday. Like, we started the show talking about how there wasn't a disaster from Brian Callahan, but at this point, he needs more than just being average. Like, he's got to find a way to prove that he can be a good head coach, because he's dug himself a massive hole with the performance yesterday.
And I was thinking about this yesterday. What's been the signature moment of the Callahan era? Drafting Cam Ward?
I mean, the win against the Texans last year is probably the only one that gave you any kind of hope for Brian Callahan. Because, like, the Dolphins won on Monday night. You were facing Tyler Huntley. I don't know how – I feel like any team could have probably beaten the Dolphins that night. And the Patriots game, you had to go to overtime with a horrible Patriots team that you gave up a ridiculous touchdown as time expired to go to overtime. Possibly could have lost that game. So those two really didn't give you a whole lot of confidence that this team was trending in the right direction. The Texans game was probably the only one that you thought, oh, okay, maybe they're starting to figure it out. And then now they've lost eight straight since then. So I would guess that would kind of be the signature moment if there is one, but it hasn't been good overall. Titans lose 33-19 yesterday. I really don't know what to say. Like, the Titans aren't going to be good this year. Yesterday, they got out talented, and Cam Ward showed that even when the talent isn't on his team's side, he can still make plays, and that is good. We've said it before that this season is not about wins and losses, and I understand that sucks as a Titans fan. Like, you want to win games, but this season is about finding out if Cam Ward is your franchise quarterback and finding out if Brian Callahan can be your head coach moving forward. So far, the early returns, Cam Ward looks like a franchise quarterback. Brian Callahan doesn't look like a franchise head coach. And if you can get answers to both of those things, you feel better heading into 2026. It sucks. You want to win football games. You have to win football games at some point. But right now, it's more about seeing the potential from Cam Ward and seeing that you can build around him moving forward.
I was listening to the Liam Cohen press conference yesterday a little bit after the Jags and the Bengals. The Jags went for it on fourth down, I believe, in the fourth quarter. And Liam Cohen was asked about, hey, why'd you go for it on fourth down? Because they didn't convert, and the Bengals ultimately ended up winning the game on a game-winning drive. And he said the analytics say 100% of the time to go for it, and that's pretty much all he said. But I feel like, and I'm not – Callahan didn't say anything about analytics yesterday, but what I'm trying to say is I feel like coaches kind of hide behind this analytical wall, but there's a feel that you have to have for the game, and Callahan has not shown so far that he has that type of feel, and yeah, that concerns me.
Yeah, I think Brian Callahan, he has to do, like, he can't just be average, like I said. Like, he cannot just status quo and keep his job. He has to be better, and that's on the large scale of penalties and discipline for his team, and on the small scale of better as a play caller and better as a game manager decision maker. We haven't seen enough good from Brian Callahan. We'll see what he can do this week. I mean, the Titans have not won back-to-back games since November of 2022. Like, that's ridiculous. It's been almost 3 years since the Titans won back-to-back games. If the Titans cannot string together some wins this year, Brian Callahan is gone. Like, you can't go 3-14 again. I think it's got to start this week. You played two really tough opponents, and I know the Broncos didn't look great against the Colts yesterday, but that defense is really good. And Brian Callahan is a large reason why they lost that game. You played a really good team with the Rams yesterday. Those weren't games you were expected to win. You're getting into a stretch of games where you should be more competitive. I know the Colts are 2-0. I still don't think the Colts are a playoff team. You have a chance to win on Sunday. The Texans, you beat them in Houston last year. You should be better this year. Can you compete with them on the road in a couple weeks? Then you've got the Raiders and the Cardinals back-to-back. Or flip that, Cardinals and then Raiders. Like, those are games where you should get a couple of wins. Callahan's got to do that. If you're 1-5 or 0-6 heading into that Patriots game, time's going to run out on Brian Callahan.
I don't want to imagine a world where the Titans are 0-6 and then get blasted by the Patriots at home.
I mean, there's just, as much as we joke about it, about Amy firing him after losing to Vrabel. If you're 0-7 after that game, it's over.
It's yeah.
There's just no coming back.
I mean, John Robinson got fired 2 days after the Eagles game when they were still first in the division. What do you think is going to happen to Callahan, who they considered firing last year but decided to hold on to him? If he's 0-7 and gets blown out by Mike Vrabel at home, it's off with his head.
Yeah, I mean, we're making hypotheticals here of what might happen. They've got to win some games in the next month or it's over. It might already be past the point of no return. I think there's still a chance if he can. There's got to be some sort of quick turnaround here, and I think it starts on Sunday against the Colts. That for Brian Callahan's job, that kind of feels like a must-win. You're at home against a divisional opponent who, I get it, they're 2-0, but I don't think the Colts are world beaters. The talent on that Colts roster is not as good as what you've seen the first 2 weeks. You got to go out there and win. And we'll see what happens on Sunday. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have thoughts. We will get back to the Titans, but there was a team locally that actually did get a big win this weekend. We need to get into that. We need to give Vandy their flowers. A 31-7 win over South Carolina. They are ranked this week. The Commodores are 3-0. We'll talk Vandy on the other side. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Mondays were made for Masero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action. From queso to kickoffs, this is how Masero does game night. Masero football on Mondays in 12 South. Don't miss a snap and a Monday Night Football doubleheader tonight. We got two games, Bucks-Texans at 6, Raiders-Chargers at 9, so get out there to Masero. Plenty of football to watch and enjoy out there in 12 South. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. We will get back into the Titans. Titans fall 33-19 to the Rams, now 0-2 on the year, but I had to give some flowers to Vandy early in the show. And late in our show on Friday, Parker and I did our Monday headlines, trying to guess what would be the story on Monday. And first off, I want to give Parker credit. He projected that Georgia Tech would beat Clemson. They did. Clemson now 1-2. And Georgia Tech in the driver's seat in the ACC.
The rambling wreck, baby. I was so confident that they would do this because this Clemson team has been... That LSU win in Clemson looks more unimpressive by the week.
Right.
After Clemson, the way they struggled versus Troy in week two and then struggling versus Georgia Tech, I just had all the confidence in the world that Georgia Tech would pull it out, and they did. And I'm so happy because Haynes King, that dude is a baller, and he's so much fun to watch.
So Parker was right. My Monday headline that I predicted was that Vandy would win in overtime in Columbia against South Carolina. They didn't even need that. They didn't even need close to that. 31-7, Vanderbilt dominates South Carolina, the number 11 team in the country. Vandy now ranked 20th in the AP poll. And I know the first thing, I'm waiting for the text to start pouring in and the YouTube comments. Well, Lenora Sellers was out. Sure. Vandy dominated that game, though. And I also will make the point that on the play Lenora Sellers got hurt, Langston Patterson got thrown out for targeting. And if that was targeting, then someone needs to re-explain the rule to me. Because I thought the whole point of it was you cannot lead with the crown of the helmet. And he hit him with the face mask. I didn't understand it. Maybe I need a retraining of the targeting rules. But he didn't lead with the crown of the helmet. I don't think it should have been targeting. Langston Patterson missed the rest of the game. Lenora Sellers was out. And I understand that is a Heisman candidate quarterback who didn't play. But Vandy was already up at that point. And Vandy outplayed South Carolina for almost that entire game. Zaylen Wood dropping out on the defensive line and jumping right into a passing lane, taking away a red zone trip for South Carolina. Vandy ends up scoring on the other end. I mean, this Commodore team is legit. This is a team with a veteran quarterback who makes all the plays that he needs to. The offensive line is the best that it's been in a long time at Vanderbilt. You've got a first-round pick at tight end. You've got weapons all over the place with Cedric Alexander and MK Young in the backfield. You got Trey Richardson. You got Caleb Barnett. You've got Junior Sherrill. Like, the offense has pieces. And the defense, that defensive line is deep. Like, they just go line changes there, and they've got options on options on options. You got players on the back end with C.J. Hurd, the transfer from FAU. Colby Taylor has turned into a great cornerback. He had his growing pains last year after transferring from Wyoming, but he's been great. Martell Hite plays all three phases. This is a Vandy team that has proven they deserve to be in the college football playoff conversation.
Absolutely. For the first time since 1955, Vanderbilt has won three straight games by 20-plus points, and they've beaten a ranked team on the road for the first time in I don't know how long. And just looking at who they have upcoming on their schedule, Georgia State, you can't overlook them since you lost to them last year, but it is at home. And then you have Utah State. There's a good chance that you start 5-0 before you head to Tuscaloosa, and who knows what could happen. Who knows what Alabama team that you're going to get. So after watching Vanderbilt, they are absolutely in the playoff conversation right now. And it is early, and I can't believe we're talking about the playoffs, but Vanderbilt does look very, very good.
You cannot overlook Georgia State and Utah State. You mentioned the loss last year in Atlanta to Georgia State. Vandy has to make sure that they come out ready to play. I think that loss will hopefully keep their heads on straight and keep them from getting too big of an ego heading into this week. And I think Clark Lee is very good at keeping his team focused on the task at hand. But you're right. If all things go as they should, Vanderbilt should be 5-0 heading to Tuscaloosa. And that's going to be a tough game. But with the schedule Vanderbilt's playing, 10-2 gets you in. If Vanderbilt is 10-2 at the end of the year, they are in the playoff. That's a tough ask with the schedule they have remaining. You have to go to Alabama, to Texas, to Tennessee. LSU comes here. You've got Missouri here, Auburn here. Like, only losing two of those games is not going to be easy. 9-3 with that schedule, I think, puts you in the conversation at the very least. We talked about it last week of you get put in that Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina spot from last year. And it kind of just depends on what goes your way in the other conferences that could get you in. But Vanderbilt, there was a lot of talk this year heading into the season saying, oh, well, this Vandy team, it's Vanderbilt. They had a good year last year. They're going to regress. And it was just scouting logos. It was just saying, oh, they're Vanderbilt, so they're not going to be able to build off last year's success. And guess what? They're 3-0. They just played two power conference teams on the road in back-to-back weeks. And over the last six quarters of those games, outscored those two teams 65-7. I understand Lenora Sellers wasn't out there for the second half of that game. But that is a Vanderbilt team that imposed their will on the road in back-to-back weeks. They've got to take care of business the next 2 weeks. But we are legitimately looking at a possible top 15 matchup in Tuscaloosa between Alabama and Vanderbilt in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And we said it last week. If Vanderbilt can keep it close with Alabama, you win that game, you take it down to the wire with Alabama, you could have game day in Nashville for that LSU game coming up on October 18th for the first time since James Franklin was here. So
I've already talked to Connor and Frazier. I said if game day comes to Nashville for that game, we're getting weekend huddle out there.
Yeah.
We're going to make it happen.
You should. You know, set up a desk just right next to Reese and Kirk and all those guys. So
a little mini game day.
Right. See if you can get Saban or McAfee to come on for a segment. I loved what I saw from Vanderbilt on Saturday. They played hard, and I understand people are going to make the Lenora Sellers excuse. And I've already seen it. Of the reaction is, well, maybe South Carolina wasn't as good as we thought they were. Can we give Vandy its flowers? Like, Vanderbilt didn't just win that game. They won by 24 on the road. Back-to-back weeks that they have dominated on the road against power conference teams. And I will have some thoughts on Virginia Tech later, because what an absolute unmitigated disaster on Saturday in Blacksburg. We'll get to that later, though. But Vanderbilt, got to give them their flowers. They got to come home. They got to take care of business. I would love, and I think Clark Lee is going to have his guys ready, because there's some revenge factor here with Georgia State from last year. I think they're going to blow Georgia State out of the water on Saturday.
I do too, because they remembered the result of the South Carolina game last year, losing 28-7 at home.
Yep.
They remember what happened to Georgia State. This Vanderbilt team, they have a boulder on their shoulder. They hold grudges. They remember. So I think they're going to blow them out as well.
The one I'm a little more worried about is Utah State, because having these back-to-back at home, if you go out and blow out Georgia State, I think maybe it's you could start to have your mind wander to Alabama a little bit. it's like, oh, we took care of business against one of these tune-up games. We'll be fine next week. Utah State's pretty good. They just put up, did they put up 50 against Air Force this weekend? Something like that?
I didn't check, but I can double check.
I believe they did. 49-30 was the score. So Utah State, not a scrub team. This is not playing Charleston Southern. Vandy's going to have to play two good games over the next 2 weeks. But man, the idea of a 5-0 top 15 Vanderbilt team heading to Tuscaloosa, that's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a fun one. I am so fired up for Clark Lee in this program because, again, 2 years ago, they lost 10 straight to end the year. And there were a lot of questions about whether Clark Lee should keep his job. And instead of being stubborn and sticking with what he thought was his way, he made changes. He fired his coordinators. He brought in Jerry Kill to be a CEO-type guy in that program. He brought in Diego Pavia. And look where they are. They're now 10-6 over their last 16 games under Clark Lee and have a chance to head into Alabama as a top 15 team, where a win against Alabama in that game, as long as you take care of business the next 2 weeks, puts you in a playoff spot, I would say. Like, if you started to look at 100%. The bracket, Vandy would be in it.
100%.
And so I'm fired up for this team. I think they proved to everybody on Saturday that they're not just a flash in the pan. And we'll see what happens the next couple weeks. We'll keep talking Vandy on the other side. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have thoughts on the Commodores' win over South Carolina on Saturday, we'll get back into the Titans coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Talk about L'Jarius Sneed a little bit in the second hour of the show, because there were some good, there were some bad. But we'll talk about the Titans cornerback coming up in just a couple of segments. We'll stick with Vandy on the other side. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday, reacting to what was a great weekend of football. Lots of great games. Titans sadly weren't part of one. But Vanderbilt was. Vanderbilt blows out South Carolina. Commodores are 3-0, now ranked 20th in the nation. And they will have back-to-back home games against Georgia State and Utah State, looking to be 5-0, heading to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. We'll get back into the Titans coming up at the top of the hour, have some thoughts on the defense, and also Dan Moore, who had another rough game yesterday. We'll do all that in the second hour of the show. But Parker, I was just thinking about it. We're going through Vanderbilt's playoff hopes, and I do want to touch more on Tennessee later in the show, because what a game in Neyland on Saturday. Instant classic, already up there for game of the year between the Vols and the Bulldogs. But it is possible. You look at the schedule for Tennessee. They've got Alabama. They've got Oklahoma. Both ranked games. Oklahoma's look good with John Mateer. But they could be in a spot where maybe you're 9-2. Heading into that game with Vanderbilt at the end of the year. Then you look at the Commodores. They've got some tough games. They've got Alabama, they got LSU, they got Texas, but let's say they're 8-3 heading to Neyland at the end of the year. I don't know what the rest of the college football landscape's going to look like in terms of playoff spots and everything. I mean, Notre Dame's 0-2 now. They have to basically win out to have any shot at the playoff. But how crazy would that game be between Vanderbilt and Tennessee and Neyland the weekend after Thanksgiving, if both those teams are playing for a shot at the playoff? Like, if Tennessee is 9-2 and a win locks them in, similar to last year for Tennessee, they were 9-2 coming to First Bank Stadium. They needed a win to lock in a playoff spot, and they did. Vanderbilt wasn't in that position. They were 6-5. They already had bowl eligibility locked up. But if they're 8-3 and a win would put them in the conversation to make the playoffs, what a game that would be. What an atmosphere that would be. And I think that could spark this rivalry, taking it to the next level. Like, I know Vanderbilt fans all hate Tennessee. Tennessee, for a long time, obviously, has kind of felt like maybe Alabama and Florida and Georgia were bigger rivals because those rivalries were more competitive. But if you've got a playoff opportunity on the line in the final game of the season, I think that could spark this rivalry to take it to a completely different level.
I've always said that Tennessee fans, this rivalry with Vanderbilt is certainly more of a it's bigger when it comes to baseball, but just depending on how good Vanderbilt is in football, that kind of changes the complexion of the rivalry, because Tennessee fans are more focused on the big three, Alabama, Florida, Bama. But when Vanderbilt is as good as they are, at least through 3 weeks right now, that can definitely bring this rivalry kick it up a notch.
I know, I'm looking ahead, and I understand it's all hypothetical. Things could go in completely different directions for both of these teams. But just slowly, like, letting my mind leak to the end of November, that could be a really fun one. That could be a really fun game. 2459 on our text line says, I'm a Carolina fan, and I just want to say I give props to Vandy. They beat the brakes off my Gamecocks. I will not make excuses. Vandy is good, and I will pull for them as well as my Gamecocks. Yeah, I mean, for South Carolina, I understand it. It's tough that Lenora Sellers got hurt and didn't play that entire second half. That took any chance of them making a comeback out of the picture. But Vandy, they got the ball up 14-7 early in that third quarter, and Lassiter had the long touchdown run, and it was over at that point. You just couldn't see South Carolina coming back. South Carolina, though, as long as Lenora Sellers is healthy and isn't going to miss an extended period of time, maybe that injury does give you some grace with the College Football Playoff Committee. Of like, yeah, they lost by 24 to Vandy, but maybe the playoff committee will take the Sellers injury into account when looking at their resume later on in the year. I don't know. I think South Carolina, still a good team. Dylan Stewart was thrown out of that game late due to unsportsmanlike conduct, but I believe Shane Beamer said that won't affect him for next week. So that's good for the Gamecocks. Vanderbilt, they went in there. They imposed their will, 31-7. Again, over the last six quarters of football, on the road, in hostile environments, 65-7. 65-7 for Vanderbilt. And I believe I saw that was only their third ranked win on the road for the Titans, for Vanderbilt. We'll get back into the Titans in program history. Like, it's really impressive for Clark Lea and company. I'm excited to see what the rest of the season brings. Again, you got two games where Vanderbilt, they have to win these next two. You've got to lock in. I understand that the emotional letdown, I think is obvious. That you come off those back-to-back road wins. Hopefully the revenge factor will keep you locked in against Georgia State. I'm a little worried about the Utah State one, just because it falls into that little gap right before Alabama where you could catch yourself looking ahead. Vanderbilt, if they can get to 5-0, they put themselves right in the thick of the College Football Playoff conversation. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Again, big props to Vandy. We talked about it last week, how big of a game that was for them, and I predicted they'd win in overtime. They won 31-7. Huge for Clark Lea, and excited to see where that program goes the rest of the year. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next. A couple of high-priced free agent and trade acquisitions. There was some good, there was some bad. We'll talk about L'Jarius Sneed, Calvin Ridley, Dan Moore coming up, hour number two here on this Monday. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.